From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in La Crosse. Thank you very much for joining us today. We're talking about civics, in particular a class offering called Rebuilding American Civics, and it is hosted by Viterbo University and facilitated by a Viterbo and UWL professor, and we're joined by two guests today. We've got Rick Kite from Viterbo University. He's specifically the director of the D.B. Reinhardt Institute for Ethics in Leadership, and Sam Sinta, founder and president of IM Education, which is a nonprofit education organization in Onalaska, and he's an associate lecturer in political science at the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse and an adjunct instructor in servant leadership at Viterbo University. In a moment, I'll welcome them to our show. First of all, let me tell you, later on in the program, we will be hearing from representatives from the Viroqua Community Theater about an interesting historical reenactment opportunity coming up that you'll definitely want to know about, focusing on the hidden diversity in Viroqua. So I can't wait to hear about that. Also, a guest from the Pump House in La Crosse is going to be joining us to talk all about ArtSpire and a fantastic new thing, new to the La Crosse area anyway, which is Make Music Day. Some La Crosse people are participating in that. We'll hear about it later on in the program. First, let me welcome our guests. Sam Sinta, welcome to the show today. Thank you very much for joining us.
Ezra, thank you so much for having us today.
Rick Kite from Viterbo, thank you for being here again.
Great to talk to you again, Ezra.
We're talking about civics, Rebuilding American Civics. Sam, you're the presenter on this series of lectures that we'll be telling people about throughout our conversation today. Why is this such an important issue to bring before the public in our area at this point?
Well, Rick and I have been talking about this idea for a few years here, the fact that we seem to have lost touch with our understanding of shared civics in this country. And we've been toying with the idea that we should develop some sort of program for adults, for people not in universities anymore. For obviously, high schools have civics classes. Universities, you can take civics classes. But what happens if you are graduated? What happens if you're well out of college and you want to engage with this stuff? What happens if you've forgotten all of this information? We've generally seen a breakdown in our political discourse. And one of the things that Rick and I have identified is this notion that in order to have better political conversations, which you have to have in our society, in a democratic republic, as citizens, we have to be willing to engage. Well, then you need to have some baseline understanding of how our civics works, how our government operates, what the Declaration of Independence says, what the founders said, what our Constitution says. And so the classes are an opportunity to give folks in our community and a shared understanding of these topics, but more importantly, a platform to actually discuss these ideas and to roll up their sleeves and wrestle with some of these concepts.
Rick, how did Viterbo University get involved? The Reinhardt Institute for Ethics in Leadership.
Well, it's a mission of the institute to bring programs that discuss both ethics and leadership to the broader community, and so it this kind of thing fits right into our mission. But it's also we're planning to do a conference this fall on civic virtue and the common good, bringing together scholars from around the country to share their research on these topics. And so we also thought it would be a good idea to present this as a theme that we work towards all year of how do we have deeper, more compelling, and I guess reasonable discussions about what civic virtue is as a way of trying to restore some healthy discourse around our political life. Right now, you know, politics has almost become a bad word. And you know, as somebody who teaches ethics, I get the joke all the time that ought to teach ethics to our politicians. But the thing, you know, classically considered, politics is simply the way in which we come together to try to seek a common good, to try to shape, you know, what is our life together going to be like? And so it's very important to be able to do that in a healthy way and not a destructive way. And that's kind of what we're hoping to encourage.
You talked about politics. It's almost like it's not politics that's sort of, I guess, evil, to use a term that gets thrown around a lot. But it's like the current level of our political discourse is is troublesome. So how do you help people understand what politics is at its best and how it interacts with how our society goes together?
Well, part of it is kind of distinguishing politics that consist in, say, campaigning and legislating versus the kind of politics that is part of a public discussion and reasoned persuasion. And this is also part of politics. And so much of the disputes we see going on in our country right now, especially the really polarizing disputes, are over what we call the culture wars. And both parties, it seems to me, keep wanting to legislate what our public attitudes will be. And so you find, like, it was, what, a day or two ago, Iowa was the last legislature to pass a law banning the teaching of critical race theory. And several other states have done this, trying to, you know, say what teachers can and cannot say in the classroom, that sort of thing. And then you get, of course, the Biden administration responding by giving encouragement to teach certain kinds of things in the classroom. And but it seems to me like these are not good ways of handling what is actually a part of a very interesting and important discussion about who we are as a nation, and how we seek as Americans to further the common good for all of us. And this has to be done through public conversation that works through persuasion, not legislation. And so that's part of what we're trying to do. And I think that, in a way, that is an important part of politics, is what we just would say is our public conversation.
Sam, Rick's talking about the culture wars for a moment there. Are the culture wars new, or does each generation just find new stuff to get mad at each other about?
Yeah, you know, one of the canards of American history is this whole idea that there was a golden age when things were better. And I, as I always remind my students, go look at the election of 1800. You know, we talk about, oh, my goodness, our elections are absolutely horrible. Well, go study the election of 1800 and you realize that fighting has been baked into the cake from day one. And as have the culture wars, as have a lot of the battles that we fight. What I think is different today is we live in a social media landscape where people are find it much easier to become entrenched in their positions and to basically wall themselves off from other positions at all. So we can disengage from any sort of public discourse when the bottom line is we actually have to be talking with people who have different opinions than us, listening to them, learning from them, hearing what they have to say. Now, obviously, there are times where you're going to have some absolutely horrible ideas that you want to shun. But in general, this whole idea of actually being willing to listen to something that maybe isn't part of your general political belief is important in this whole process.
Sam Cinta is with us, the founder and president of IM Education, which is a nonprofit organization in Onalaska. He's an associate lecturer in politics, in political science at the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse, and an adjunct instructor in servant leadership at Viterbo University. Rick Kite is also with us, director of the D.B. Reinhardt Institute for Ethics in Leadership. Sam, as you're getting ready to have conversations like this with the public, we've talked about politics, we've talked about civics. The conversation today is kind of about civics education. Are those two the same thing? They seem to, if you draw a Venn diagram, they seem to interact with a lot of the same subject matter.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And for the courses, really what we're looking at when we talk about civics is the foundational ideas that inform our government processes. So obviously they then touch into politics, but the root there is in this whole notion of civics. And our understanding of what makes our government what it does, why things happen the way they do. What we do in the courses, for example, is we start at the founding and we look at things like the Declaration of Independence. And we actually read through the Declaration of Independence, which you know, a lot of Americans don't take the time to actually sit there and contemplate the words. We know the famous phrases, right? But we don't really look at the whole thing or the context of the document, and then connect the dots from that to the Constitution. So you have the idea of America embodied in the Declaration, and then you have the kind of legal aspect of that then kind of articulated in our Constitution. And again, the same thing, it's let's actually read the Constitution, not say what we think it says, but actually read what it says, look at the context and try to understand how these things are shaped so that we can then have a grounding to better understand the political discourse that happens. So a great example is one of our classes, we talk about federalism. And that doesn't sound like a real sexy topic to people. They hear, oh, federalism, wow, that just doesn't sound very exciting. And yet, if you look at American politics today, federalism issues, the shared power or the tension of power between the national government and state governments is really on the cutting edge. It's a place where a lot of activity happens. Well, to understand federalism, you have to understand how this country was founded, what the roots were, what is in the Constitution that talks about federalism, and where the states have authority, where the federal government has authority, so that you can then better rationalize your position and understand your political position as you're talking about it. Well, what we're finding is as we're sharing with these groups of, we'll call them students, they're all adults, right? Those foundational elements, they're all of a sudden seeing nuance in some of their arguments where before maybe they had a set position that was informed by, you know, something they had read online or something they had seen in a news channel. And now all of a sudden it's like, well, golly, I didn't realize that, like, that's what it really says in the Constitution about this. So maybe that's what I need to incorporate into my understanding on my political discourse.
There seems to be such a resistance among people to be willing to change their ideas based on new information. It's people come to the conversation, as Sam mentioned, kind of locked into their point of view. Rick, as you see people interacting with some of the community education programs that you've offered, how can you reach out to people in a way where they're more willing to receive new information and new data and bring themselves around to potentially different ways of thinking about the world than they had thought of before?
One of the best ways that I found of doing that is getting a group of people that agree to focus on what we hold in common, which is largely the means by which we operate. So, for example, if we talk about the Bill of Rights, for example, these provide certain kinds of constraints with which we all agree to kind of hold our actions accountable to these. So issues of free speech and free exercise of religion and so forth, this is really important that we say, okay, we're going to accept certain bounds by which we operate. And then within those bounds, we're free to pursue certain ends that we might have. And it's those ends that primarily divide us. So like our special interests. So like gun owners are very concerned about, you know, protecting their ability to own and use firearms. There are many people that want to restrict that for mainly for reasons of safety. And they have different interests. And yet you have to look at, so what do we hold in common as far as how legislation operates, what the Second Amendment says? All of these things kind of provide the constraints within which we operate. Once we focus, instead of just starting with the positions which divide us, if we can start with the means that we hold in common and really try to get an understanding of that first, we find that even people that have very different backgrounds and interests have much more agreement than you would think. And it's very interesting to have discussions where people then say, now I have a much better understanding of why people I've always disagreed with say what they do. And that doesn't mean they automatically agree with those people because they still have separate interests, but they find their opponents to be more reasonable than they had previously thought. And see, that's, I think, one of the key aims of something like this, is to stop portraying, say, 50% of Americans who may disagree with you or something or have a different interest as being entirely unreasonable. because that's not the case. Most Americans are quite reasonable once you understand the perspectives with which they're operating. And then the question is, so how do we become reasonable together and pursue a more healthy political dialogue?
That's Rick Kite from Viterbo University. We're also talking with Sam Cinta today from Viterbo, UWL, and IM Education, a nonprofit organization in the area. We're going to continue our conversation, including we'll tell you how you can participate in these classes geared toward adult learners, and we'll tell you about a podcast that Sam and Rick are involved in together, and much more as our program continues. If you'd like to get in touch with the show, you can send us an email. It's newsmakers@wpr.org. That's newsmakers@wpr.org. I'd love to hear ideas you have for future shows or questions you have about this subject as well. So send us a note at newsmakers@wpr.org. Our program continues in just a moment. It's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. It's Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall in our La Crosse studios. We're talking about civics education today. We'll learn later in this segment more about how you can participate in a series of conversations on the subject in the La Crosse area. First, let me talk. Our guests are Sam Cinta and Rick Kite. I want to hear about this podcast you guys do. Rick, what podcast do you and Sam work on together?
Well, it's the Inspired Minds podcast, and it really is. Sam, I'm going to let Sam jump in here because he's the main kind of person who's the contact person and leads it off. I kind of jump into the discussion and probably speak more than I ought to, but Sam is the host of it, so I'm going to let him go ahead and describe it.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's called the Inspired Minds Podcast, and what it is again, Rick and I have been having these conversations on civics, on civic responsibility, on civic discourse, on civil discourse for some time, and we decided with the pandemic back in December, we said, well, what if we just launch a podcast, and the premise of the podcast is our search for ideas to restoring American civic virtue. So again, trying to figure out those things that unite us, those ideas that will build bridges as opposed to dividing us. And so it really is kind of born out of this curiosity of the two of us to just talk with very interesting people across the country, which we've done through this point. We've had, I think now we're on our 16th podcast, which records this afternoon. And we're just talking with a wide range of people, everyone from a guy by the name of Andrew O'Shaughnessy, who runs the Jefferson Center at Monticello, talking about the influence of Thomas Jefferson and the founders, to Beth Conover, who is an environmentalist in Colorado, who has worked a lot on urban planning, to Jonathan Marks, a conservative scholar and academic political scientist, who is looking at the whole issue of liberal arts education and the value of liberal arts education, to Nico Perino, who is with FIRE, the Foundation for Individual Rights in Education, talking about free speech, to former Senator Gary Hart, talking with former Senator Hart on the whole idea of the common good and our responsibilities as citizens in America. And so in each of these, and they're truly conversations, they're not interviews, we are just talking with fascinating people about these ideas that help us to build this whole notion that there are these civic virtues out there. And there are people that are working toward trying to make sure that Americans have these shared virtues. And our job is to facilitate conversations with those folks to get the word out there. So it ties in very nicely with the class programming that we're doing as well. They work real complementary together.
Well, that's a perfect segue because the details of the class program is what we have yet to cover. So let's talk about how many sessions are in this class and what information is going to be covered.
So we've already done our first two rounds of this. We wrapped up our second round last week. We've had a great community response to this, such that our first two rotations of the program filled up almost immediately. We start a new session next week, and this is going to be our first in-person session. So we're going to actually do a Zoom session on Monday, June 7th. That's where we're just going to introduce the program, and then people can join in person. We'll do two in-person classes on Tuesday, the 8th of June, and Thursday, the 10th of June. To get information about that, the best bet is to go to the Viterbo website, and you can just search Rebuilding American Civics, and it'll take you right to the Reinhardt Center page, where all the information is contained. You can also email Jill Miller at Viterbo, and she is the one who is helping to coordinate all of this. And her email is Jill, J-I-L-L-M, Miller, M-I-L-L-E-R, at viterbo.edu. And Jill will be more than happy to get you information on the program. So our program next week is our third rotation, and we still do have slots. It is pretty full already, but we still do have a few slots left. We will be continuing in the fall. We're not going to be doing any more programs during the summer, but we will be continuing in the fall with additional programs. So do contact Jill if you're interested, but maybe can't make it next week, because we'll keep you informed as to future programs. But this is going to be an ongoing effort moving forward, where we really want to get as many members of the community involved in these conversations as possible.
So how much subject matter are you trying to cover in one of those class periods? You mentioned there's the online thing on Monday, but then the in-person stuff later in the week. How much territory are you trying to cover each time?
Probably more than we should, but we're trying to be aspirational and covering as much ground as possible. So next week, as an example, our sessions on Tuesday will be covering understanding the Supreme Court. So we'll be doing an overview of how the court operates, the judicial branch, probably the least understood of our government branches. And then that will segue into a session on privacy. And so we'll talk about privacy rights and time permitting, even touch on the Fourth Amendment and how that interacts with the whole idea of privacy. Then on Thursday, we're kind of pairing up topics as we see fit. Next Thursday's session is going to be starting on civil disobedience and the whole philosophy of civil disobedience, talking about where the roots are of this notion of civil disobedience and how it plays out in society today. So you can imagine that should lend itself to some really nice conversations with the group, which we really try to emphasize, followed by a discussion on election reform. And the reason we're doing election reform is that in our first sessions, we talked about elections generally, how American elections operate or have operated historically. So now we're taking that next step of saying, okay, now that we have a baseline understanding, and of course, if you didn't make the first sessions, it's okay. You'll get enough information to be able to proceed. But looking at all the calls for reform across the country in terms of our voting processes from both political parties and how that is playing out in our political discourse.
Rick, I want to talk about putting together a program like this, because everybody's going to know what perspective are you coming from? Are you coming from more of the left or the right? Or how do you make sure that they're balanced? In making sure that they're balanced, how do you make sure that you're not just trying to achieve some false balance, some sort of idea of neutrality that may not even be reasonable? How do you navigate all that in times when a lot of people just are really having trouble seeing people who disagree with them in friendly terms?
I hardly know what to make of these kind of political categories that we assign to people now. And as you know, I write a regular column for Lee newspapers, and I regularly get emails accusing me of being a conservative, or other ones accuse me of being a liberal and just trying to bring my perspective into it. Sometimes I get emails from people accusing me of being on opposite sides of the political fence about the same column. And it's really interesting that that's the first question people want to know, is what category do you fit in, so they know what attitude to take towards you. And the thing is, largely political left and right are defined by our interests. And this is what we're trying to do, is say, like, that's the end point of our political dialogue. The beginning point where we have to start is what what makes us citizens and what do we as citizens hold in common? And this transcends those political categories of right and left. And in fact, I believe very firmly, we need both liberals and conservatives in a healthy country. And right now on the extreme ends of both sides, they think that we really need to eliminate the other side in order to make progress. And I think that's a conceptual mistake, that we need people on both the left and the right because they speak to different kinds of concerns and legitimate concerns about where we are going and what is important, and to a great extent hold different kinds of values. But oftentimes these values aren't mutually exclusive. And so like on the best part of like the conservative side is a respect for tradition and a commitment to doing things incrementally and as much as possible, respecting individual rights and kind of local autonomy. Now, this is the best part of conservative tradition. And the best side of the liberal progressive tradition is a real insistence on justice for all, and looking at, are there times where our commitment to our tradition makes us complacent about injustices that we should be addressing? And the other thing is a commitment to innovation and experimenting and trying new things. I think all of that is healthy. And when either the left or the right becomes dominant, it leads us into a tendency to corruption. And so if you ask me if I'm on the left and the right, I'm not. It doesn't mean I'm in the middle between them. I think what's more important is focusing on what we hold in common before we pursue these different ends that we have.
Sam?
You know, and Ezra, one of the things we talk about in our foundational class, when we start at our first two sessions, we talk about the foundations of American politics and American civics, is that both the liberal and the conservative attitudes are found in our founding era, are found in our institutions. And so to me, that's the beauty of the whole thing, is that if you kind of look at it that way and recognize that there are elements of both ideologies there, well, then right away we can get this sense that we have this thing that we can share in common.
I remember the friends, a friend and colleague from my old days working in Mississippi. When we would venture onto political subjects, he would just lament how ridiculous it is that you take a country with 300 million people in it and insist that they all be neatly divided into only two different political points of view. So that sounds like a little bit of what you're getting at, Sam.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of nuance here. And I think there's a lot of times in our own lives when we probably fit into one box or the other, or maybe, you know, it kind of floats in between, right? That it's just it is a bit absurd. We know as an organizing principle that two political parties make a lot of sense, right? That there's a structural reason for that. But that doesn't mean that we all have to fall neatly into that. And I think if you look at the complicated history of America, you realize, well, that it is much more nuanced than that, and that there are then opportunities to find that place where we do share some understanding.
I want to give one more opportunity for people to get contact information about this specific lecture series that we're talking about today. But Sam, I have neglected to ask you about your endeavor outside of UWL and Viterbo, which is IM Education. You mentioned the Inspired Minds podcast. IM, is that what that stands for? Inspired Minds?
Yes, it stands for Inspired Minds. Yep. And we do a whole host of programming. We do critical thinking programming in local high schools. But this is our first venture into community programming. For the podcast, you can go to our website, which is inspiredmindsedu.org, or you can go to either Apple or Spotify on their podcast areas for either Apple Podcast or Spotify Podcast, and just look up Inspired Minds Podcast, and that will pop right up.
And Rick, what about contacting people about the civics, the Rebuilding American Civics class?
The best way is just to go on our website, just to viterbo.edu/ethics and look for our website, and has all the information there, and including contact information so that people can reach out and enroll if they would like to.
Rick Kite is the director of the D.B. Reinhardt Institute for Ethics in Leadership. Thank you very much for joining us today, Rick.
Good to be here. Thanks, Ezra.
Sam Sinta is the founder and president of IM Education, a nonprofit organization in Onalaska. He's associate lecturer in political science at the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse and adjunct instructor in servant leadership at Viterbo University. Sam, thank you for an interesting conversation.
Ezra, thank you so very much for having us, and hope all goes well this weekend for you.
Absolutely. If you'd like to stream this conversation again, here's something that you might have missed. You can find it on our website along with all of our other programs. It's wpr.org/newsmakers. If you'd like to throw a comment my way, good or bad, I'd love to hear it. Love to hear what you think about the show today. Our email address is newsmakers@wpr.org. Coming up next, we're going to be talking to some arts organizations about some wonderful opportunities coming up in our community. That's next on Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our studios on the campus of the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse. We are glad to see some events up and running this summer and eager to talk about a couple of things going on in the area. First of all, in Viroqua, we're talking about A Walk Among the Ancestors, which is a really interesting project from the Viroqua Community Theater and the Vernon County Historical Society. We're also joined by Tony Asher from the Pump House, who's going to talk to us about Art Spire, which is back this year. We're excited about that. And Make Music Day, which is coming to the La Crosse area for the first time, even though it's been an international event for some years now. So first of all, let me welcome our guests to the show. Tony Asher from the Pump House, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Ezra. It's nice to be here.
Absolutely. And we have Kristen Parrott from Vernon County Historical Society. Kristen, thank you.
Yes, thank you for inviting us.
And Pam Kalinowski from the Viroqua Community Theater. Pam, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, happy to be here, Ezra. Thank you.
Let's start in Viroqua, A Walk Among the Ancestors. Pam, how did this idea get started?
Well, the Historical Society has been doing cemetery walks for several years now. And this year I was approached by, I can't remember if it was you, Kristen, or Deanne Krause, about the possibility of the community theater supplying actors for the characters that portray persons that are buried in cemeteries. And I thought that sounded like something we'd like to try.
That sounds very interesting. So, Kristen, how many characters are going to be portrayed?
We have 5 people this year. The Chinese laundryman Yip Phuc Loy, an African-American lamplighter named Jefferson Kraft, businesswoman Elizabeth Rice, female politician Lillian Proctor, and an Eastern European Jewish merchant named Harry Levin.
That sounds very interesting. And you have actors portraying these people as people tour through the cemetery. Are all of the figures buried in the cemetery there?
No, they aren't. Usually in an ordinary cemetery walk, they would be. But to showcase the diversity of our community, we needed to be a little creative. For instance, our Chinese laundryman was a World War I veteran, and he's actually buried at Fort Snelling. So he will appear in the cemetery at the gravesite of one of his friends. And Harry Levin is buried in the Jewish cemetery in La Crosse, but he will stand at the gravesite of his brother-in-law, who is buried
Okay, very interesting. And we'll get more details about some of these people as our conversation goes on. Tony Asher from the Pump House is with us, and you're here talking about ArtSpire and Make Music Day. ArtSpire's coming up first, so let's talk about that. A difficult year, not only for the Pump House, but for artists all across our community. How important is it that ArtSpire is back this year and happening in person?
Yes, it's a very exciting time for our artists and the general public too, of course. ArtSpire is a celebration of community through the arts, and we are excited to present 45 artists in various disciplines. 10 of the artists are from La Crosse, and all others are from surrounding areas, from Madison to places in Minnesota. So we've covered quite a large area with a lot of excitement from the artists about appearing and being able to do this in person again. And we're also featuring live music throughout the day. So we're just over the moon to present this again.
So various disciplines represented. So people think of like an art show that might go on at the Pump House where there are paintings that they can observe or maybe even purchase, or a theatrical performance kind of thing. What other kinds of artistic endeavors are going to be represented at ArtSpire?
Well, the artists are representing things in fiber, painting, printmaking, glass, jewelry, wood, paper mache, pottery, mixed media. So there's a lot to see. When we decided to go ahead with ArtSpire in 2021, this decision had to be made back before we really had much of a vision of how open things would be. So we worked with our county health department and the city of La Crosse to present a very safe event. So there aren't perhaps a lot of activities we would have in a normal ArtSpire year, but there's going to be a lot happening, a lot to enjoy, and a wonderful day to celebrate the arts in La Crosse.
And when is ArtSpire?
ArtSpire is Saturday, June 12th from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. But behind the scenes, the artists will be setting up at 6 a.m. We'll probably have volunteers down here before that. So it takes a lot to put it on. We're excited to share it with the community.
Absolutely. The other big event that the Pump House has been involved in is Make Music Day, which is making its first appearance, so to speak, in La Crosse. We've been having Make Music Day events. Wisconsin Public Radio has been involved in promoting them for a few years across the state, but the first time in La Crosse. Tell me about your involvement in Make Music Day and what you've got cooked up this time.
Right, Ezra. So we're really excited to launch Make Music Day in La Crosse. And Ann Katz with Arts Wisconsin brought this idea forward to me a couple years ago. And it just takes a lot to get it going, but it always seemed like a wonderful idea of people just making music and of any skill level. If it's a solo guitar sitting on your front porch, or the most famous band that's performing on stage, it's just a day of celebrating free music throughout the community. And La Crosse is really happy to join with the other communities in Wisconsin this year. We have several venues, and we have lots of different bands and individuals participating. I think yesterday we received our shipment of 100 harmonicas. And
oh, wow.
Maybe it's 50 harmonicas. I think it's 50 harmonicas.
That's still a lot of harmonicas.
It's a lot of harmonicas. We're going to have all kinds of music happening and things for people to share in on June 21st.
Okay, June 21st, Make Music Day. Not just in La Crosse, but really all over the world, it's Make Music Day. And so that's going to be exciting to experience. Back to Viroqua, talking about A Walk Among the Ancestors. I'm interested in learning about a couple of these characters that are represented. Pam, what is the favorite character of yours that you've learned about getting ready for this series of events?
Well, I will actually be portraying Lillian Proctor, who was the first woman to run for an assembly seat here in the Vernon County back in 1924. And that was right after the passage of the 19th Amendment. So she was pretty well known in the community because of the family and family name. But she was up against a pretty strong opponent. here in the county. And she was very brave to take this on, and it had a really good showing, actually, for all that she had to endure. There's a lot of hidden secrets in Viroqua's past and our country's past, where diversity was not embraced as we would like to have it be now. So that comes out in what my character, my person, tells us.
What is known about how the public reacted to her seeking that office, or maybe how her opponent reacted, or just what she had to endure? How much do we know about the difficulty that she went through upon running for office?
Well, only that I can only say from the tally of the votes that it was like 3,600 to 2,500. So that was a pretty close tally, but she was running against someone who had been mayor already. He was already the incumbent in the assembly seat. And there isn't a lot in the news clippings we have about the competition between the two candidates, except that she was pro-prohibition and anti-KKK, and the other side was wanted to keep things as they were, and she was with the Republican Party, which was also called the Progressive Party. We were having a time yesterday, weren't we, Kristen, trying to determine if this independent Progressive Party was actually the Republican Party, but we found it in the platform book yesterday that the Republican Party was called the Independent Progressive Party, that was firmly behind La Follette for president also.
Okay. Very, very interesting character to learn about. Kristen, what about you? What's another favorite of the characters that are going to be portrayed? I call them characters because there are actors involved in portraying them, but these are historical figures. Who's another interesting person that we'd like to learn about?
Jefferson Craft is one of my favorites. He was born into slavery in Tennessee, maybe around 1820. He came north to Vernon County after the Civil War. He settled in Cheyenne Valley, which is in eastern Vernon County near Hillsborough. And he had a farm there in the 1870s and 80s. And then he came to Viroqua with his young family in the late 1880s. And he worked here as a lamplighter, and he worked in Frank Minshall's dray barn. When he died in the early 1890s, he was buried in the Viroqua Cemetery. We have evidence that he bought plots there and that they are occupied, but he does not have a stone on his grave.
No stone on his grave, and yet you're including him in this series of presentations. The tour is being offered several different times on the day that you're doing it. Tell me about the date and time and what people need to do to participate.
It will be on Sunday, June 13, at the Viroqua Cemetery. It begins at 2. We're offering 3 tours on the hour, 1 at 2, 3, and 4. There's a suggested donation of $5, and you will be walking around the cemetery on what we hope will be a bright, sunny day. So wear a hat and some good walking shoes.
Very.
And we're meeting at the gate.
Meeting at the gate of the Viroqua Cemetery. If people are unfamiliar with Viroqua, is it difficult to find?
I hope not. It's on the eastern side of the city. It's at the corner of East and Hickory Street.
So people can go to Artspire on Saturday and the 12th, and they can go to the Walk Among the Ancestors on Sunday the 13th. For those coming to Artspire downtown, people feel weird still going in public sometimes. Different comfort levels And you said you made these plans in advance of the society opening back up as it has in the last couple of weeks, which has been very good to see. But what precautions might people be able to participate in if they're still feeling a little bit iffy about just jumping right back out in public with the rest of their neighbors?
Absolutely. So we are following the CDC guidelines, and fully vaccinated people do not have to wear a mask, but you are welcome to wear one if you'd like. We even have on hand hundreds of ArtSpire green masks. So I have them all ready to hand out for you. If you're not vaccinated, then it is recommended that you wear a mask. We have distanced our tents. The artist booths used to be 2 feet apart, but you'll find them this year that they are 10 feet apart. So there is a wide space, and we will limit numbers of people in each booth at a time. We've arranged for the music performers to have the sound projected throughout the area. So there's not an area where people will, there won't be a congested area like in front of a stage. We have hand washing stations and hand sanitizer available throughout the grounds. And of course, we recommend if anyone is not feeling well to please not attend, but stay home.
Music performances are it's always fun to be involved in public music performances and to hear that going on. And that's just such a thing we've missed over the last year. How many artists are going to be musical artists are going to be part of ArtSpire this year?
Right. We have six different groups performing, and we're actually headlining Harmonious Whale, which I think everybody probably knows pretty well. And we're excited for them to close out from 4 to 5 o'clock at ArtSpire.
That's going to be really fun. That's going to be really fun. How many people do you anticipate coming? Is there any way to even, I guess that'd be a hard thing to guess, but is there any way to project that?
Well, pre-COVID days, we would have 5,000 people here for our ArtSpire weekend. We really don't know what to expect this year. So we have our fingers crossed that we'll have a great turnout. And it's going to be a wonderful day on the 12th as well as the 13th.
So it's going to be a great weekend. It's not this weekend. It's next weekend. Where can people go to find out more information, Tony, about ArtSpire or Make Music Day or whatever else is going on at the Pump House?
Absolutely. Our website is thepumphouse.org, and you can find links there to ArtSpire and Make Music Day and other events happening at the Pump House.
Tony Asher is with the Pump House. Tony, thank you very much for being a guest on Newsmakers today.
Thank you, Ezra.
Pam, tell me about where people can find out more information about the Viroqua Community Theater or the Walk Among the Ancestors that's coming up.
Oh, sure. ViroquaCommunityTheater.org or just Google Viroqua Community Theater and it'll send you right to that. And we have a poster on our front page of our website for the Walk with the Ancestors. And there's other links on our website for things that we've been doing online since the pandemic.
While we have just a second, let me ask you, what about a season this year, next year, an in-person season? How is that? How are your plans going as you try to kind of navigate the new reality?
Well, as I said, we've been doing skits online this whole past year, and we've got five in the can right now, and we have a plan for two-person show for this fall. We have auditions coming up here in June, and we're hoping for a big summer musical next summer. So those
good.
Are the two things we're counting on.
Wonderful, wonderful. And Kristen Parrott from the Vernon County Historical Society, tell me how people can find more information about your work.
From our website, vernoncountyhistory.org.
vernoncountyhistory.org. Kristen, thank you very much for joining us on Newsmakers today.
Thank you.
And Pam, thank you for being here as well.
Yeah, thanks, Ezra.
This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. If you'd like to stream a part of this program again, maybe you missed part of our conversation today, or maybe there's an episode you'd like to hear from a previous week, you can find all of them on our website. It's wpr.org/newsmakers. If you'd like to throw in an idea or maybe you're involved in a project and you'd like to put your hat in the ring, let us know what's going on in your community by emailing newsmakers@WPR.org. That's newsmakers@WPR.org. Dawn Jewell is the producer of our show. John Davis helps us out as well. I'm Ezra Wall. Until next time, thank you for listening. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio.